This is Dana Gardner, Principal Analyst at Inner Arbor Solutions, and you're listening to Briefings Direct. Today we present a sponsored podcast discussion coming to you from the Open Group's Enterprise Architecture Practitioners Conference in Boston, the week of July 19th, 2010. We've assembled a panel to examine the key market trends impacting enterprise architecture in different regions of the world. We'll evaluate how the use and value of enterprise architecture is emerging and progressing worldwide, and how the expanding use of EA offers a unique window into global business trends as well. Our guests will share their knowledge on several developing and mature markets, as well as present a focus on China. We'll hear about the cultural barriers and or accelerants for EA adoption from region to region. Here to help better understand the role of enterprise architecture as it bestrides the globe, please join me in welcoming our panel. We're here with Alan Brown, President and CEO of the Open Group. Welcome, Alan.
Thank you.
We're also here with Eric Boulay. He's a President and CEO of Armis More and also CEO of the Open Group France. Welcome, Eric.
Morning, Dana.
Chris Ford, Vice President of Enterprise Architecture and Membership Capabilities at the Open Group, also joins us. Welcome, Chris.
Good afternoon.
And Mats Ganneval, he's Certified Enterprise Architect with Capgemini Sweden. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
We're also here with Stuart McGregor. He's the CEO of Real IRM and CEO of the Open Group South Africa. Welcome, Stuart.
Good afternoon. Glad to be here.
Alan, let's start with you. Tell us a little bit, if you will, about what's happening globally. Why EA, enterprise architecture, so popular now? We'll get into the regions in a moment about why it's happening here and there, but any general perceptions as to why EA is such a important aspect of enterprise architecture, IT, business development at this point in time?
Yes, thank you, Dana. A trend that's happened over a number of years now within enterprises is that the barriers within enterprises, the silos, the departments, the stovepipes, have been broken down. And organizations are working cross-functionally, they're bringing people together, and they're working with their business partners, and they have their IT infrastructure integrated with their business partners. That has caused a requirement for people to be able to look across the entire organization and think about how IT impacts different parts of the organization and how it integrates together. And many parts of the organization have had applications built for the stovepipes that now needed to work together in ways that they were never intended when those legacy applications were put in, because we never intended those legacy applications to last this long. But they did, and you can't just replace them. So what's happened with this, what we call boundaryless information flow, or the requirement for access to integrated information under security issues, because of that, we're now having to deal with something called enterprise architecture on a number of different levels. Many people have tried to define enterprise architecture, and I don't think anyone has come up with a satisfactory overarching definition yet. But there's a number of different aspects to it. At the moment, enterprise architecture is always focused on the IT element, although it's got ambitions to look at the architecture of an entire enterprise at some stage. But largely at the moment, it's focused on IT. We're looking at people that are looking at the entire enterprise from an IT perspective, like a city planner would. So you've got that kind of enterprise architecture. Then you've got other folk that are more focused on specific solutions. That's also enterprise architecture. So EA is an umbrella term that relates to an awful lot of activity that flows further down, whether it's business IT architecture, data architecture, and so on. So there's many things. But the driving force in many organizations is this need to integrate information and to share information across. And in governments, you're seeing joined-up government, you're seeing citizen-centric government, and to deliver those services and to do so economically requires this boundaryless information flow concept, and that requires the discipline of enterprise architecture.
Right. Now, of course, we're in an environment where not only are the technology trends unfolding at different rates, but we have a different economic environment from region to region, some regions struggling, others growing quite well. Being based in the UK, being familiar with Europe and North America, where the economies are still struggling, is there anything about the economy and the position of budget pressures that is perhaps accelerating or having an impact on the adoption of EA?
It varies from enterprise to enterprise. We're seeing continued growth in the adoption of EA in general and TOGAF in particular, and it is continuing to grow. There are organizations who are saying, well, enterprise architecture isn't delivering near-term bottom-line surplus, so we're going to cut the cost. There are more organizations that are actually saying, this is the time to invest, to rationalize, to really drive out value from our IT investment. And so you're starting to see a mix of things. But generally speaking, my experience in the developed or struggling economies is that there are more people focused on EA than not.
Eric Boulay in France, tell me a little bit about what the market for enterprise architecture is there and what perhaps some of the drivers are.
The key drivers is a necessity to move forward for big enterprise and smaller one. I mean, because of downturn, the future of enterprise is to go roll out on an international standard view. So in order to roll out, for example, and for big banks in a European or worldwide basis, they have to work on big transformation, and this kind of big transformation can be held by EA, by architecture. It's an architecture issue to transform a local enterprise to a worldwide or a European enterprise. And this is a huge opportunity for enterprise architect and for enterprise architecture to help in this big change. So there is no downturn for EA, because once more, if we build a new practice, an EA practice, in order to better answer to this kind of job and of work, it's a huge opportunity for us, and we face that today. There is no downturn for us. It's only a matter of raising the right skills in order to help enterprise to go abroad.
Mats, based in Sweden with experience in Northern Europe, is transformation the real driver here regardless of the economy?
Transformation has always been a big driver in the Enterprise Architecture Forum, but what we see these days is getting your IT under control has been a major factor for going into the enterprise architecture side of things, slowly the companies now are moving into actually connecting the IT structures they have with the business. And it's been a struggle in the beginning, and most of the EA projects were IT-based projects. But now, slowly, the business is starting to understand the full impact, and that the IT solutions that we create should really be aligned with the long-term strategies and objectives of the organizations. Mm.
Do you perceive any difference between public sector and private sector in terms of the adoption and markets you're familiar with?
In the past, the public sector has been pretty slow uptake, but recently we're doing a lot of business with healthcare services and so on, and they are finally starting to understand the full impact of they are really large organizations as well, with 30, 40, 50,000 people, and they have lots of different divisions, and they need to work together in a collaborative fashion. And fulfill sort of the long-term goals that the politicians have set up for them.
Great. Stuart McGregor in South Africa, are there certain trends afoot that you can identify that perhaps are prominent in your market, but that might also represent other like markets?
South Africa is probably slightly different because of the fact that enterprise architecture is really being driven from the business rather than from technology. that a lot of the organizations have spent a lot of money working on business processes, and that business process architecture across the business domain is now being linked to the technology domains. So we're probably the opposite. In fact, we're coming from the top down instead from the technology side upwards. South Africa currently has roughly 10% of the Architecture Forum membership are South Africans. So there's a big adoption of TOGAF in South Africa. You know, if you look at our GDP in comparison, you know, it's quite exceptional. And that's really been because of the Open Group's presence in South Africa. You're organizing events, a lot of TOGAF training, a lot of certification, a lot of press articles really driving the business value and the business understanding of what enterprise architecture is about. We've had, you know, for example, Sasol, which is one of the larger petrochem organizations, adopt TOGAF, working it into their governance standard. But what their enterprise architect did is he bought Enterprise Architecture Strategy, the Ginny Ross book, and distributed that to senior executives. You know, given the fact that it's written in business speak, really led to the adoption and understanding of what enterprise architecture is about, quite as a serious driver for the uptake within the business. So we really differ across business sectors as well, in that our financial services sector, again, a big focus on the business process area. They're lagging in the technology domain, and that's now a key focus area, bringing that up to speed. Also across the natural resources sector, where, for example, we have an open group standard called M, which stands for Exploration, Mining, Metals and Minerals, where we're working on putting together reference architectures for the sector. And that's also driving global adoption of TOGAF. So it really differs across sectors, across organizations, basically. So there's no one size fits all.
It seems a credit to TOGAF, Alan Brown, that it can be playing a role in so many different markets with so many different variables at work. Perhaps you could, from your perch, tell us about certain markets in the world that are seeing the most impact or most adoption or uptake of TOGAF and or enterprise architecture.
Yeah, we're seeing it pretty broadly across the planet. Really. Obviously, the US and UK were leading, but the amount of uptake in Asia-Pacific region right now is quite dramatic, and we're starting to see that take off. But it's really difficult to isolate any particular region. We've now got something like 15,000 members of our professional body, the Association of Open Group Enterprise Architects, that are in some way or another connected with TOGAF or our IT architect certification. And those people are distributed across 116 different countries. So it's really quite difficult to say, you know, which is growing the most.
Well, let's go to the Asia-Pac region. And Chris Ford in China, what are some of the elements of TOGAF's growth and adoption that you can identify that might be specific to China?
I think that the Chinese market is really very interesting. There's really an opportunity there for the EA practice to grow massively. I think that for the most part, larger enterprises in the China region are relying on the brand name Western companies to do strategy and planning. And there is very limited internal capability, knowledge and experience around enterprise architecture. And what I've been hearing from folks in various organizations, both state-owned companies and others, is that they're reluctant to step away from these brand name companies because there's a certain degree of security around the planning and activities that go on there. But there's also a degree of dissatisfaction that they aren't feeling in control of their own fate. So over the next several years, what I anticipate happening is the development of internal architecture practices and an upskilling of staff. And the universities are already have in place CIO forums and executive MBA activities that explicitly deal with enterprise architecture as a set of concepts And over time, I think that it's going to find its place in the Chinese organizations. As at the moment, they're still continuing with this kind of organic growth of IT approach to things, which is something that the Western markets dealt with 15 years ago and found the need for a more planful approach to doing things. And I think that this is the opportunity for us in EA in that particular market. The issue is that there isn't really at the leadership level in these companies right now a perception that they really need to do anything, because the problem hasn't actually arrived broadly inside China, from what I'm seeing.
I'm going to guess that in some of the more mature markets, they wish they had had an opportunity to invoke some of these practices before it became a problem. So is there an opportunity in China for them to perhaps to gain a lesson from the rest of the world?
I think there is, and this is one of the things for the emerging markets. It's the similar thing around cell phones. The learnings that have occurred in the Western markets have produced a body of knowledge in TOGAF that can accelerate for other companies the way they adopt and improve their ability to deliver on strategy and planning and execution. And I think once the recognition is there inside companies, when the need arrives, those companies in that market that have planned for this will start to really accelerate in terms of their global position.
Is it your understanding, or anyone else on our panel, that the other so-called BRIC countries, Brazil, Russia, and India, are facing a similar situation as China?
I wouldn't comment directly on the other BRIC countries. I have a sense that that's the case, but I don't have any specific information in those markets.
Okay, great. Another set of variables that we can bring into this picture are some of the technology trends: mobile, cloud, data explosion, complexity, and then, of course, due to the economy in many regions, probably most regions, an emphasis on efficiency. Can we look to any of these trends and find a relationship between EA adoption in a particular market? Why don't we try with you, Mats, in Sweden?
Capgemini's put together a number of service offerings that actually are worldwide and that we are adapting in each country to the conditions in each one of the countries. And we can see that things like the boundaryless information, being able to use information in new ways is something that every company wants to do. And cloud always comes into the discussion, even though people don't quite know how to use it yet. And I think the Open Group's effort around cloud computing can actually help that to a large extent. The ROA paper on cloud computing, for instance, will be a tremendous help for a lot of companies to have a look at it and see what can they do. But everything is moving very, very slowly, and in countries like Sweden, the bigger company might try this out, but the smaller ones are not ready yet.
Mm-hmm. How about Eric Boulay in France? There are some technology trends or adoption trends in business that perhaps are spurring some of this adoption of a enterprise architecture perspective.
Sometimes it makes sense to have an engineer analysis of the situation, if I can say that. We used to consider what is behind the world, and sometimes we are very cautious about hype words such as cloud, what is cloud, and I heard that many of CIOs here in France used to say that we are doing cloud computing, we have been doing cloud computing for a while. I mean, what's the difference between private cloud and a huge internal data center with shared services, application or infrastructure. So to go back to EA, we spend a lot of time to move from IT EA to real EA. And now I think we are very mature to take the new capability brought by new technology. Cloud should be one of them, And now we are ready, once more, we're ready to move from old-fashioned way, if we can say that, old-fashioned way of sharing resources to perhaps better practices brought by new technology. So it's not a big deal. And once more, if we have to compare to how EA can, or to talk about here, how EA can brought something, it's obvious that EA is a way to transform. So you can transform the business, but you also can transform the way to consume IT.
Very good. Anyone else have any perspectives on technology? South Africa, from your perspective, Stuart?
Not technology specifically, but probably more in the domain of information architecture. That we're seeing greater focus on modeling and defining information architecture specifically. And you're understanding the difference between information architecture and data architecture, and using that as a way of bridging the gap between business and technology by tackling the information architecture domain.
Well, because we're in such a globally connected environment, I'm wondering if there isn't a benefit down the road as more of these regions and more of the large organizations, public and private in them, standardize and adopt enterprise architecture as well as IT practices, business practices, that it doesn't offer more of a opportunity for these markets to work more in concert, reduce the friction of trade, reduce the friction of services, goods, even perhaps as cloud computing unfolds, and we don't know how it's going to happen, the opportunity to share cloud computing resources across great distances and boundaries. So back to you, Alan Brown, is there an opportunity for us to consider a unifying influence of EA that would have a growth and or efficiency benefit as more and more markets, in a sense, start approaching their business problems in a similar fashion?
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's worth also bringing Chris to see his experiences. But everything I hear says that organizations that are involved in enterprise architecture in general, and TOGAF in particular, are finding it much easier to integrate with business partners. Mergers and acquisitions are enabled more effectively. So working with other organizations as we get more and more connected world, enterprise architecture is a positive force in that.
Chris Ford, your perspective on that, the notion that the more enterprise architecture around the world, then perhaps the more easily business can be conducted at a global scale.
I would say that the long-term point around that is valid. I would also say that there's a certain learning curve to be gotten up in terms of enterprise architecture, and that depending on the maturity of the company and of the region, you might be talking anywhere from a six-month payback on an EA activity to a three-year payback on an EA activity. The interesting thing about the body of work that we have available to us in TOGAF is that if you look at it as a tool in the context of the problem you're trying to solve, you can drive immediate value. If you look at it as some sort of massive program that you're going to implement, you're looking at a longer term payback. And so I think it's very important for individuals and companies to approach enterprise architecture with a specific problem in mind, not just some sort of generic goodness thing that they're looking at.
Fair enough. As we think about the tactical and then potential strategic benefits, people who are engaged understanding what they need to do but not sure how to start, can we point them in any specific directions? Where do you go to get started learning more about EA, learning more about TOGAF, finding the tactical and then perhaps ultimately the strategic values, Chris?
I would say that there are a number of places. The first and foremost one will be the membership of the Open Group, in particular the Architecture Forum. You've got people sitting around this microphone right now that can help, and you've got people out at the conference who have an enormous background in this sort of capability. Then in the member companies, either on the supplier side or on the customer side or in academia, just in the marketplace, you also have resources available. Those are the places to go to find out what you need to get, what you need to do, and what the approaches can be used, and in practical sense, what the barriers and the pitfalls are in the approaches. People here have been there, done that, and that's where you need to go, is to the experience.
Mats?
In the past, we, as consultants, used to go out and do architectures for companies. And we came out and we delivered a folder saying, here's your enterprise architecture, go ahead and implement it. And of course, that didn't work. So these days, we actually encourage companies to work with us, to work with experts on the, in the field and teach them and work and produce these enterprise architectures together, because enterprise architecture is not just a project. It's got a life cycle and it needs to be maintained. And if companies don't get that knowledge themselves, the enterprise architecture will die.
Any thoughts, Stuart McGregor, on this journey of beginning it, perhaps regardless of where you're starting from?
I certainly support what Mats and Chris have just said. To me, organizational change leadership is an absolute essential component of getting enterprise architecture to work. The mechanics of modeling, etc., it's not really that difficult. It's stuff that we've mastered and we've been doing so for years. It's how to drive positive, business-appropriate and sustainable enterprise architecture practices that are run like businesses. In other words, with a very clearly defined offering, who understand who the customers are and can really deliver more value than they cost.
And Eric Boulay?
I should mention in France we had a long journey to come up on architecture and to catch architecture practice, enterprise architecture practice. And right now we can consider that we moved from IT enterprise architecture to enterprise to real business enterprise architecture. And this is a big shift because now CXO are no more chasing for enterprise architects. They are trying to educate enterprise architect inside the company, and they understand they need this kind of body, this kind of people, in order to make the company be successful and to move forward. So the big change and the big recognition for us is that they need our body of knowledge, the TOGAF and the enterprise architecture body of knowledge, and they need us to train and to coach and to help their inside employees to become the leader inside. And enterprise architects are definitely, as many of you and Alan mentioned, are really people who are ready to talk with different stovepipes in order to, there is no more stovepipe in these companies.
Alan Lesford, do you have any thoughts about getting started, how companies and or countries and regions that haven't taken this journey too deeply could avail themselves of 10, 20, 30 years' worth of experience that others have traveled through?
Yeah, the first one is if you can get to one of the conferences and share experiences with other members, that is the key area to start. But if you can't do that, then there's an awful lot of available information. The minimum is that TOGAF itself is available freely online for people to read and look at and use within their own organization. You can buy the book if it's easier to have that. If you want to go to a next stage, there are many training organizations that can train your people in TOGAF. If you can't avail yourself of that, there are some countries where that's not possible, then there is a study guide that you can get from the Open Group to work your way through. And there are examination centers, parametric examination centers everywhere. And working your way through that gives you a good understanding of TOGAF. It doesn't necessarily make you an enterprise architect. So you've got to have the abilities that go with that, and you've got to have the experience. And again, if you can work with some of the folk either at our conferences or local chapters. We've got chapters in many different countries now, continents now, of the association, and sharing with them, corresponding with them, or our other members is the way that you actually get the real experience of how to do it and what people have done and what pitfalls there are and so on.
Great, thank you. We've been discussing key market trends impacting enterprise architecture in different regions of the world and how folks are using enterprise architecture and gaining value from it in both emerging and more mature markets. This sponsored podcast discussion is coming to you from the Open Group Security the Enterprise Architecture Practitioners Conference in Boston, the week of July 19th, 2010. I'd like to thank our guests. We've been here with Alan Brown, President and CEO of the Open Group. Thank you, Alan.
Thank you very much, Dana.
We've also been here with Eric Boulay, President and CEO of Arismore, and also CEO of Open Group France.
Thank you, Dana.
Mats Gainaval, he's the Certified Enterprise Architect at Capgemini Sweden. Thank you.
Thank you, Dana.
And we've also been joined by Chris Ford, Vice President, Enterprise Architecture and Membership Capabilities of the Open Group based in Shanghai. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks.
And last, Stuart McGregor. He's the CEO of Real IRM in South Africa, as well as the CEO of the Open Group in South Africa. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dana.
This is Dana Gardner, Principal Analyst at Inner Arbor Solutions. You've been listening to a sponsored Briefings Direct podcast. Thanks for joining, and come back next time.